You're listening to Second Look, only on WZND.
Hello and happy family weekend, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Second Look. I'm Rachel Deerfield.
And I'm Jason Zaylor. Today we will be discussing the Humane Society's fundraiser, speaking to the student body regarding recent political violence, Normal Town Council's newest resolutions, a 6.5-hour-long football win, and your regional team's games looking forward. The Bloomington Normal Humane Society hosted one of its largest fundraisers of the year. With more information on it, we turn to June De La Hunte.
We collect over a period of a month or so items from people who want to donate. If you can imagine, like, a normal garage sale times, like, 100.
The Humane Society's primary function is to find permanent homes for abused, abandoned, and unwanted animals in Illinois. According to Monson, events like this are what keep the lights on.
All of our operations run from our community support and donations directly to us, so these types of events are really important.
In addition to participating in fundraisers like this one, Monson suggests Bloomington Normal college students volunteer at their shelters if they're interested in helping.
A lot of students are not at home with their at-home pets, and so we love to have students volunteer at our shelter.
Monson also mentioned Redbird Animal Advocates, a new RSO at ISU that is linked to the Humane Society. They plan to host a number of events this year, both on and off campus. In early October, the Society will host another fundraiser in Bloomington Normal, Tails and Teenies, where participants can try custom cocktails created by local restaurants to benefit the Humane Society. For WZND, I'm June De La Hunte.
Last week, Charlie Kirk, the co-founder of the conservative organization Turning Point USA, was assassinated at the Utah Valley University. WZND's Caitlin Wittes spoke to students at Illinois State University on how they feel about campus safety.
Last week, conservative activist Charlie Kirk was assassinated while speaking to a crowd at Utah Valley University. Kirk traveled around the country with his organization, Turning Point USA, encouraging students from all sides of the political spectrum to share thoughts and debate. In the aftermath of last week's events, students have taken the time to reflect on political violence and campus safety. ISU freshman Hamda Anaza shares her thoughts.
I don't know much about Charlie Kirk, but I do know that a lot of people got upset over the fact, and it caused a lot of disputes on campus. Nothing violent yet, but a lot of the controversy did make people split up, make them grow more wary of each other for their political viewpoints.
Online, there has been plenty of disagreements surrounding Kirk's assassination and his political messages. Though his messages have sparked controversy in the past, many agree that violence is not the answer. ISU senior Ryan Dedek discusses his thoughts on political violence.
I don't think that anybody should be assassinated for giving the right to speak to somebody, but he's like a journalist at the end of the day.
Last year, Kirk visited the ISU campus on his tour. With gun violence being a topic of debate, especially in schools, students contemplate the future of campus events. Hear what Anaza has to say about campus safety.
I don't know how I feel about it. I feel like it's a little overboard to have to constantly bring in some security to anyone who visits campus. It just makes it feel like campus is an overall unsafe place to be.
Campus safety is a topic of conversation that is encouraged at ISU through things like seminars and updates sent through the Safe Redbirds app. Dedek shares his feelings.
I think it was like a one-off situation. I really think it was comparable to anything here at ISU. Like, I've never felt endangered in that way here.
While students express their personal feelings on their own campus safety experiences, ideas to keep future speakers and audiences safe are shared as well. Anaza offers solutions.
I think things maybe indoors might work. I feel like anytime there's a violent occurrence in the political situation or through speeches, it's usually outside. Maybe just doing things inside might help security more, also because not everyone's always allowed inside as much as they are to walk around campus.
While overall the Charlie Kirk assassination has sparked controversy across the country, many agree that nobody's life should be taken due to their beliefs. For Second Look, I'm Caitlin Wittes.
Kirk, who was on Illinois State University's campus just 5 months ago, while there were different views on Kirk's views towards it, many believe that the assassination was wrong.
Bella Morello stepped into this week's Normal Town Council meeting, where community members voiced their support for raising the number of dogs allowed per household.
The Normal Town Council met for the second time this month on Monday, discussing an ordinance amending Chapter 17 of the Town Code, which would change the limit of 2 dogs per household in the town of Normal to 3. A young Normal resident, Ann Tabber, stepped up to the podium for public comment, urging the council to support increasing the code limit. Council member Scott Preston later turned his attention towards Tabor's public comment, thanking her for stepping up and supporting her points.
Be it nuisance from noise, be it being off leash, sanitary conditions, and the like, none of those are specific issues that would be more applicable with three dogs as they would be with two.
A retired Normal resident, Mike Kerber, stepped up for public comment in opposition to the amendment. Kerber often runs along Constitution Trail and said that he has had many run-ins with dog owners not having control of their dogs, leading Kerber to be jumped on and pushed off the trail. Kerber voiced his concerns surrounding the increase of dogs per household, believing that this limit increase would increase the number of misbehaved dogs that he would see on the trail. Preston later responded to this comment.
And I did pull up the email that you had sent us back in June. And if you don't mind, I would like to paraphrase just a part of it that I found impressive was that a public commenter in her email to us talked about how she made a presentation and gave it to her parents outlining the reason for them to get another dog. I love it. And I hope that an offput of that effort tonight is the sensible policy that is before us being approved to change from 2 to 3.
Normal City Manager Pamela Reese confirmed that towns surrounding Normal had a limit of 3 instead of 2.
I did check some of our peer communities to find out how we compared, and it turned out that many other communities already allowed 3 pets, and we were not the norm in that. So we evaluated that and is coming with a recommendation to modify it from 2 to 3 of the species.
The council voted to pass this amendment ordinance. Normal Town Council meets at 7 p.m. every first and third Monday of each month. The next meeting will take place October 6th.
Once again, for more information on the Normal Town Council and their meetings, visit the town's website at normalillinois.gov or attend the meetings at 7 p.m. every first and third Monday of each month. Once again, the next meeting will take place on October 6th.
We will be right back with more stories and Second Look after this short break.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it, so far we've talked about the Humane Society fundraiser, the student body regarding recent political violence, and the Normal Town Council.
Next Sunday is this month's edition of Bird's Eye View, where Colleen Holden, Bella Morello, and Allie Cooper will be discussing the Big Beautiful Bill. In studio with us today is Colleen Holden. How are you doing today, Colleen?
I'm great. I'm really excited to be here.
Yes, thank you so much for coming in on this lovely Sunday. Hopefully the rain is going to stay away for the rest of this weekend. What inspired you to bring this topic to Bird's Eye View?
So I had been wanting to find a way to address it, like, through our news coverage for a while. I just wasn't quite sure how to do it. And there's also, like, there's so many, like, little aspects of it that would kind of be their own stories. So I figured a show like Bird's Eye View that takes, like, a bigger topic and dissects it through, like, several different perspectives is probably the best way to go through it. I actually, for the longest time, one of the whiteboards in our office just had, like, a bunch of, like, scribblings. It kind of looked like I was, like, an FBI agent who went rogue, yeah. Just, like, scribbling stuff down on the whiteboard, trying to be, like, now, how do we make this local? And, like, who do we talk to about this? And, like, how do we drag in this aspect of it? But I'm really proud of what we have so far. I think it's going to be a really good episode.
Well, that's great. And why do you think it's important to inform people about this bill?
I think it's important because there's, like, so much discourse about it. There's, like, a lot mm-hmm. of people who are happy that it went through and a lot of people who are worried about the effects of it. I think it's a good idea to just kind of, like, get all of the cold, hard facts out on the table so people can kind of see, like, what they can really expect from this versus kind of, like, some of the things that have just been kind of floating around social media about what they maybe could expect or, like, just stuff like that. Just having the right information be portrayed, especially in an area with, like, so many different groups that could be affected by this, I think it's super important to have that news shared.
Yeah, and you talked to me, too, prior to the start of this show about doing an interview and how that's going to be affecting people here locally. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the interviews that I did, I actually did just yesterday with our McLean County Democrat chair, Patrick Cortese. He was really knowledgeable on, like, all, like, the kind of trickle-down effects of it because he was able to kind of, like, explain to me some of the more, like, zoomed out, like, federal causes and how that'll kind of trickle down to our community here. And it was, mm-hmm. He talked about, he talked about the stuff with like student debt and like the Department of Education and how that could have some adverse impacts on our economy, because a lot of the students with jobs who aren't just giving every dollar that they make back into their tuition, they're putting that back into our local economy. So with new adjustments to things like that, more students will have to put more of their money into their tuition and less of that money will be going into our economy. There's also things with like SNAP benefits. Like a lot of our community members are on SNAP benefits, and if that were to be taken away, there'd be more pressure put on like Midwest Food Bank, School Street Food Pantry. We don't know if they're going to be able to have the staffing power or the general resource to handle that sort of thing. So then what kind of happens next for these people? I don't want to give too much away because I obviously want people to tune into the show, but it's just kind of stuff like that that you wouldn't necessarily think of to be a reaction in local areas. You think of it as just kind of like a big federal thing, not going to impact you all that much, but there actually is like some ways that it'll impact like you or your neighbor or your family or friends.
You touched on it a little bit, but is there going to be direct effects to college students, and should college students be worried about this new bill?
You know, it's hard to say what exactly will happen. You know, it takes a while for stuff like this to go into effect. Some things could still be vetoed. There's also like, we live in a state with a governor who is probably going to try to protect students. That's always been something that he's been passionate about while Pritzker has been in office. So like, things could very easily change. I think people should just kind of like be aware of like what their FAFSA statements look like, you know, kind of keep an eye on these sort of things and make sure that they are informed about what their future will look like.
Great. And is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about this month's edition of Bird's Eye View?
I just think it's really important for everyone to listen. I think, you know, like I said earlier, there's like a lot of discourse on like what's actually going to happen. Like, is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? It's not our place to say if it's a good or a bad thing, but we will have as much concrete information as we can give people so that they can best prepare themselves for the future. And I think that's a really important thing to have.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on Second Look today with your busy schedule, Charlie.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm honored.
Great. We will be back after this short break with local sports.
You're listening to Second Look, only on WZND.
On Saturday, the Illinois State Redbird football team muscled through the North Alabama Lions in a gritty 38-36 double overtime victory, going on 6.5 hours of total game time following two very long weather delays. Coach Brock Spack spoke post-game about the weather and if the team could have been more prepared.
We got in a funky situation there, you know, when we came back out with, what was it, 2:27 left. And then we gave up a touchdown, and we can't do that. So, yeah, it's hard to prepare. You could do stop and start some things in practice. You know, you could have a break and have them sit out for 5-10 minutes and then come back out. Now, when we didn't have the indoor, that was what we did when we had thunderstorms. we had to do that. But now we have a nice indoor. We don't have to break practice. We just go inside, which is nice. But yeah, it's hard. It is kind of hard to prepare for that. Nothing like a game tempo, though. You know, a game practice is different than a game.
So, Jason, you were the play-by-play for the game yesterday for that very long game alongside Nate Cishak. I was there, but I was there in the stands. The game lasted, like you mentioned, six and a half hours with two weather delays and went into two overtimes. So kind of chaotic day for the Redbird football. Redbirds were still able to pull off that win against North Alabama 38-36. So first thing that obviously I noticed was Tommy Rittenhouse back in the QB spot for the whole game this time. So what did you see from him?
He had a great game. I mean, 250 yards, 20 completed passes, 3 touchdowns. In the post game, he did come out and say that he had more incomplete passes than complete passes, and that was something he did want to work on. Personally, watching it from overhead in the booth, it didn't seem like he was inaccurate. It didn't seem like he was having a bad game necessarily. Again, his stats definitely show he did not have a bad game. But I can see how, you know, it's a super close game, had to go into double overtime. If you're the captain of the offense, you're absolutely going to be looking at yourself and being like, what could I have done better? What could I have done to maybe make this not such a close game or close out the game earlier?
Yeah, and like you mentioned, he had at least 3 or 4 that I'm remembering off the top of my head right now, long throws down the field that looked great to me. Obviously, maybe did not execute them and did end up being incomplete passes, and or a lot of them did turn possibly into pass interference that was good for the Redbirds. If I'm remembering correctly, I think there was 4 pass interference calls.
There was, so you can look at the stat sheet, and UNA had 10 penalties for 129 yards compared to Illinois State's 4 penalties for 55. Like you said, they had, I believe Nate and I counted, 6 total flags were thrown for pass interference against UNA. Six. Only 4 were accepted because one came off of a fantastic play where Eddie Casper had another trick play over to Sobkowitz, and that was a completed pass for, I believe, 39 yards, which was much more than the 15-yard penalty would have allowed. So, I mean, UNA kind of had a poor game with that, but their offense was stellar yesterday, coming off the Eastern win.
Yeah, and to me, it was just good to see the Redbirds actually taking advantage of those penalties that were put, obviously, up against the Lions. And additionally, too, going back to Rittenhouse really quick, it seems like that shoulder injury is now a thing of the past. Would that be correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's the starting quarterback. He was in a pretty good mood. Again, he was only a little upset with his completion percentage. Mm-hmm. But overall, he did have a good game, and he's a leader of men.
Yeah, absolutely. In the second quarter, the Lions brought in their backup QB, who played for the rest of the game after their starter, number 5, Robinson, took a hit in the later of the first quarter. How did this affect the Lions' offense?
Ari Patu. That's the name to look at. Ari Patu, he's a 7th-year graduate student for UNA. Was transferred from Stanford 2 years ago. Last year, he had his breakout game against ISU. He had 300-plus yards of passing, 2 touchdowns, and a 25-yard rushing touchdown. And then he comes in today as the backup in this ISU game. Again, the starter ends up getting benched come the second quarter. He walks in there, and he has an incredible game. He brings the UNA Lions back from the dead, basically. Ends up putting up 22 uncontested points against the Redbirds following that first rain delay. He had a fantastic game, and only 1 interception, which I guess we could talk about more. Shadwell Nakuba.
Please.
4 weeks in a row, 4 interceptions. So he's continuing his streak there, and he's looking great as a defensive leader.
Yeah, and before that first weather delay, like you mentioned, I believe it was 17-7 Redbirds way. And then, of course, we went for about an hour, rain, lightning, whatever you want to call it, delay. Players had to go back onto the field, obviously re-warm up after that hour, and then we only had that 3-minute halftime. But how does that affect the players physically and mentally, having to go back after an hour delay?
Yeah, Brock's back. The head coach, he touched on it very briefly, and it's a lot of downtime. He talked about how some of the players had their pads off. They were just stretching. They didn't want the players laying down. They wanted them still up and ready because they didn't know if they were going to be coming out sooner or later.
Right.
As NCAA rules state, it's a 30-minute from the last strike rule about lightning. And, of course, we had 2 of them, and they were much longer than 30 minutes, unfortunately. The players, again, they ended up coming out, and from our view, they looked slower. They looked unprepared.
I agree.
UNA, of course, they kind of found their stride after that first break, and they came out, scored a touchdown immediately. Then they had the short halftime, scored another one right after that, and pretty quickly it was, 21-24. Illinois State still up, but UNA was nipping at their heels. So.
And after the second weather delay, what did you see that was different? I guess we can talk offensively and defensively from both sides.
UNA, they continued to look dominant. They were in control. They weren't making mistakes. They were capitalizing off the pass defense of ISU's lack of pass defense, honestly. They were making great plays, even though they had tons of penalties on defense and a few on offense, including one on their head coach. They were still able to capitalize. They still ended up going up 30-27 come the end of the game.
Right.
So, and then Illinois State, they stayed stagnant. They only scored once, and then they had to bring Matt Maldonado out. He had a pretty great game, 42-yard field goal, and then a 51-yard field goal, which is also a career high for him. Unfortunately, 2 misses, one which was blocked late in the game, which would have been the game winner, and then one earlier that was just shanked left. So.
Yeah. And going into this game, it felt like Illinois State should have beat North Alabama.
Pretty handily.
Right. Yeah. Not by 2 points.
Yeah.
So what happened? Obviously, yes, it was the weather delays and it was some of the stuff like that. But touch on what could have the Redbirds could have done even better, even though we did get a win.
I honestly don't know. I mean, if anybody listened to Red Zone, I anticipated that this was going to be a blowout win for ISU. I was thinking it was going to be offensive dominance, 50-28 maybe. I did believe UNA was going to put points on the board, but I didn't expect it to be this close. Honestly, I think ISU underestimated their defense. I even though UNA wasn't as good as ISU come the end of the game, defense was underestimated, and I think the mistakes and just getting held up on a lot of runs and third downs, that caused the ISU offense to stagnate.
Yeah, no, I definitely like that take. Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely.
In other local sports, the Illinois State women's volleyball team traveled to Dayton yesterday to play the Flyers at noon, falling to them in three sets.
The NFL will kick off their Sunday slate today, and locally, the 0-2 Chicago Bears will host the 1-1 Dallas Cowboys at 3:25. Chicago will be looking for their first win of the season, which has so far been highlighted by injuries, poor defense, and an underwhelming vibe all around.
The Chicago Cubs clinched a wild card spot on Tuesday for the first time since 2020 and are still looking to push for the division, as they are only 7 games back from the Milwaukee Brewers with 6 games left in their schedule.
I think it's kind of interesting because 6 games left in the schedule, but 7 games back. Of course, right? On the MLB website, it says Chicago still has a chance to win the division. I don't know how that works with maybe it's Milwaukee has to lose out, Cubs have to win out. Maybe it relies on something else happening in our division or outside of our division. I'm not completely sure. But what are your thoughts on the Bears game today? And
yeah, I'm excited, actually. I mean, yes, it's against the Cowboys, so there's definitely our defense is definitely going to have to step up. They're a good offensive team. And last week, it was, to me at least, it was a shocker when the Cowboys played the Giants and it went into overtime. And I was like, really?
Yeah, no, that it was a shootout against the Giants.
Yeah, it did not seem that. Like, that game should have gone into overtime.
Well, also, I mean, the Bears, they have not been looking good. I mean, of course, injuries to Jalen Johnson, star cornerback, captain on defense, and then TJ Edwards, who I'm still unsure if he's even going to play today at linebacker. But, I mean, so far, the Ben Johnson era, off to a slow start for the Bears.
Yeah, and it seems like that this is going to be like a trend again, right? When we keep bringing in new head coaches or new staff in general, and it's just seeming to be the same story over and over again. Yeah. And obviously, Ben Johnson brought in this huge just wave of enthusiasm towards Bears fans to see what we could possibly change, and we're just not seeing that yet. Granted, I will say it's early, so I'm hoping that will change, right?
I was going to say, unfortunately, I feel like a lot of Bears fans are already jumping ship, and it's I can't say if it's fair or not just because it's a new system for a new offense.
Right.
Again, tons of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, and we've played good teams. Minnesota is a good team that took advantage of a lot of Chicago's missteps. And then the Lions, I mean, they're coming off winning the division very handily.
Well, I was just going to say, last week we played the Detroit Lions. Obviously, that's where Ben Johnson did come from their offensive coordinator. And it seemed like the Bears were lost.
Yeah.
Frankly, I lost. But I have my Bears t-shirt on today, so maybe that will bring some better vibes to the team, hopefully.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we talked about the Humane Society's fundraiser, speaking to the student body regarding recent political violence, Normal Town Council's newest resolutions, a 6.5-hour-long ISU Redbird football win, and some more regional sports. For Second Look, I'm Jason Zahler.
And I'm Rachel Deerfield. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday, everyone.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.